Welcome to Monster Chats, presented by Monster VoIP, where we share the tools, methods, and best practices that business leaders use to build new connections, strengthen relationships, and impact sales and organizations of all shapes and sizes. If you have any questions that come up during today's episode, please text them to 424-378-6966. Please welcome the founder of Monster VoIP, your host, Colin Mitchell.
Welcome today to a special edition of Monster Chats Live. I'm speaking with Rick Gerard of Stride Search and the host of the Higher Power Radio Show. Super excited to get to know your story and let people know a little bit more about yourself personally and professionally.
I'm excited too. Thanks for having me, Colin. It's a pleasure to be here.
Awesome. Let's jump right
in. And I want to get shit done.
Oh, yeah. We got the mugs here. Cheers. And we're just going to jump right in. So tell our listeners a little bit about your story. Growing up as a kid, where'd you grow up? What was that like? And what challenges did you have growing up?
Oh, man. So I am actually a California native, surprisingly. I grew up just outside of Malibu. And I grew up in a family where it was me, my brother, and my parents. Kind of normal childhood, nothing super exciting. I was just always a kid who was into doing like art, and I was a surfer kid, and never really gravitated toward like, you know, a lot of team sports or anything like that. But I really like loved skateboarding and surfing and snowboarding once that kind of once I got the bug for that.
Yeah.
I was just kind of a normal average kid. I didn't really like school that much. I was more of an artistic kid, so I really enjoyed, drawing and things that were a little bit more project-oriented as opposed to like math and stuff like that.
Did you struggle in school, or was there
I had a hard time applying myself in school. I got bored really easily. So I was like, probably, you know, before they had ADD, I was probably one of those ADD kids. Mm. But when I got focused on things I enjoyed doing, I could totally like crush it. So I was a smart kid, but I didn't enjoy school. And that was actually through high school. And then it was weird because when I got into college, I was straight A's. And I think, you know, I probably have always had a bit of an issue with authority. So like when nobody's pushing me to do anything, I do it on my own. But when people are telling me to do stuff, you know, I think just as I was growing up, it was just against my nature.
I think the best entrepreneurs struggle with authority, right?
Totally, totally. And I had a stint where I went to Catholic school, which was Our Lady of Malibu, strangely enough. And I remember, God, like my first couple weeks there, I was the kid who was always questioning why. Mm. Like, I don't get it. Why? And the nuns did not like me very much because of that.
So how long did that stint last?
I talk about it like I did time there. So I only did a year there. And then I went did 2 years through middle school at a private school. And then fortunately, I got to go back to public school just because my mom wanted me to go to an all boys Catholic school, and I did not want anything to do with that. So thankfully I didn't have to.
So you changed schools a lot as a kid. Any reason why? You mentioned school was kind of a tough thing for you. Authority was a tough thing. Yeah. Were you getting in trouble? Were you getting kicked out of these schools?
No, not at all. Actually, so I was like normal, like easygoing kid, like pretty shy in elementary school. I think my mom wanted me to get a different type of education. So in middle school, she sent us to a private school. My brother flourished in it. I just didn't do all that great. Mm. And then when it came to getting into high school, again, my mom wanted me to go to an all private boys Catholic school, and I wanted nothing to do with that. So I probably purposefully didn't do so well in the entrance exams and didn't get accepted. And thankfully, like I got my way and I finished my 4 years at high school.
Okay.
You know, public high school.
So then let's fast forward a little bit to college. You said you did really well in college where you didn't have that authority or direction.
Yeah.
Tell us about your college experience.
So, you know, the first 2 years of my life in college, I actually went to a community college and I was building my portfolio. My goal in life after high school was to become a Playboy photographer. Like back in the day, that was like the ultimate job you can get as a photographer. The work that they put out was amazing and they were doing some cutting edge things.
Yeah.
So I wanted to get into art school and I was able to actually get accepted and go to Pasadena Art Center. But my first 2 years was building up my portfolio and I went to Ventura Community College as well as Moorpark Community College. And I just kind of took a lot of photography classes and a lot of my general stuff. And then I was able to get accepted. It took me about 4 tries to get accepted of sending in my portfolio, but finally I did.
So tell us about the portfolio that you were building up to be a Playboy photographer. I'd love to see that.
I was shooting a lot. Yeah. I only did a couple of shoots that were like kind of partially nudes, but most of the stuff that I was doing was I was trying to pay my bills at the same time. I got a job with a portrait photographer that he was really supportive and helped me out. And he was to this day, one of my best mentors that I've ever had. He hired me because I decided I was going to get a job in photography. So I picked up the phone and I started calling photography studios in my area and wow. asking them for a job. So I just started cold calling a bunch of photographers. I'm like, hey, look at
what was your value proposition there?
You know, my value proposition was, hey, look at, I'm looking to get into photography. I'm a hard worker. I will bust my ass for you. Are you hiring? That was just that simple.
Yeah.
And I had one taker and it was a guy named Charles Peloso. And it just turned out like he was, he was the guy who did all the high school senior portraits for the area that I lived in, which is up in Ventura County. And, it was cool because he's like, yeah, come on in. I'll meet you. And I talked him into hiring me and he hired me for a summer job. And that turned into a couple of years. Like I got to work on actually 2 Playboy photo shoots, which was really cool.
Right.
Although I never saw any of the models or any of that stuff because I was actually the guy in the back loading film backs because they had film back in the day. Or I was working on the lighting of the set they're going to be working on next. So I was testing lighting and running Polaroid test shoots and, you know, all that stuff.
And then they kick you out when the fun happens.
Yeah, pretty much. Pretty much.
So what did your parents think about you pursuing this path of wanting to be a photographer?
They were supportive. So it wasn't like I don't think my dad really, cared one way or the other. It was like, you know, he thought it was kind of cool. My mom is more the artsy one in my family, so she kind of got it. Mm-hmm. My dad tends to be like a sports guy. So he's very, and my dad's was in the car business for years. So, he's just, I think that's where I get a lot of my sales acumen from, is that he's a natural, like just grinder. And like, I used to say my dad could sell an ice cube to an Eskimo. Like,
yeah,
he was that good.
Well, you obviously passed it on because you cold called to get your first job, right? So
yeah. I just know that I think I learned early on that if I want to get anything, I have to go after it. And that's just been something that's been the core of my being. Like whenever I want something, I get it. Because I just will be relentless and I'll get to the point where I'm able to acquire it. So
walk us through what happened with the photography career or pursuit of.
Yeah. So photography, I was in it a couple years and I was kind of learning about the industry. And one of the things that I realized was that, you know, you put in a lot of time. I met a lot of people that were assistants for professional photographers for like 10 years.
Wow.
And unless you're like some sort of, savant or something like that, like you don't get a whole lot of attention. You're just kind of a number one of like numbers. And what ended up happening was in that industry, it turned into being a glorified construction worker. I was building sets. I was doing a lot of things, and I was not doing a whole lot of photography. I was doing a lot of darkroom work when I worked over at the photography studio.
So it was a long path of putting a lot of work in before it could actually become something.
Yeah, and which was cool. I was putting in the work, but at some point I started thinking, you know, I really need to start making money.
Mm.
You know, the poor starving artist thing, I think I had a realization at some point where, man, that poor starving artist thing was not all it was cracked up to be. And I wanted to build a life. And so what happened was I kind of fell into business. One of my cousin's husband had a recruiting firm and had been doing it for like, you know, a really successful firm, built it up, 10 years going, and they were just doing phenomenal. And we had kind of reconnected with them. We haven't seen them in years.
Mm-hmm.
And I went and had lunch with them, and he's pulling up and like, sweet car. We went over to his house afterwards. He had this amazing house in the Hollywood Hills. And I'm going, what do you do? Like, how do I get here? And he told me about what he did. And you know what? I still didn't really understand what he did. It was just kind of like, oh,
yeah. You just kind of wanted what he had.
I place people in jobs in tech. And I'm like, okay, well, sounds like easy enough. Like, how do you do it?
You know how to pick up the phone. So you had a head start.
Yeah, strangely. And I don't think I realized it at the time. But and that was what the job was too, was picking up the phone and calling people and saying, hey, I got a candidate. I got a person who would be great for your company. I mean, this is what I was taught, which is not the way to do it. But hey, I've got this person. They do X, Y, and Z. Would you be interested in interviewing them?
Did you actually have those people or not quite yet?
Yeah.
So you actually had the candidates ready?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So it was weird because, so I went out to lunch with him one day and he said, hey, look, you know, we're going to move up to Idaho. To Sun Valley, which is a ski resort area.
Mm-hmm.
And if you want to come, you have a job. And I thought about it for like 15 minutes and went, I'm like, is there snowboarding up there? And he goes, yeah, dude, we're in a ski resort area. And I went, done. I'm like, so by the end of the lunch, I'm like, okay, well, when are we moving up? What's the date? And we had it all dialed in. And I went back that following Monday to my job with the photographer, and I put in my 2 weeks notice. Mm. Actually, I think I gave him a month notice.
So this was your first recruitment job?
Yeah. Yeah. So I moved up to Sun Valley, Idaho with a job in hand.
What was that like relocating there? Like just picking up and leaving and starting your life, you know, over? I mean, you're still young at that point.
Yeah, I was like 23 years old. So it was like, you know, I didn't have a whole lot of things. So I just packed it in like a U-Haul. I think I rented a U-Haul, and with an old girlfriend, we both packed up and moved over there.
Mm-hmm.
I think she lasted like 2 months and I had to move her back. But for the most part, it was pretty easy. Like everything fell into place. He helped us get a place. And then it was kind of like trial by fire. So I show up as we move in. I show up a week later. I didn't even have a phone or a computer or anything yet. He had these fold-out tables, you know, those ones that you buy from Costco?
Yeah.
And that was my desk.
How many people were there in the office? Was it just you and him, or others as well?
There was one other guy that he had found that had started. So there's three of us. And basically, he had a computer. I didn't have a computer. He gave me a phone list of companies with people's names in it and a telephone. That's all I had. Like,
it's so funny because that's how my first sales job started as well.
Oh, really?
I worked for a company that sold aftermarket supplies, and you know, I didn't go to college. I barely made it through high school, and you know, it was my first real job, and it was on the phone, and we had a list of names. We had a CRM, we had a computer, but the CRM was garbage. It was held together with duct tape.
Yeah.
So we created our own system where we actually used index cards for our leads and put them in a box. And that's all I had. Very little training, a script that was average at best, and a list of names to call.
No, it was probably a pretty terrible script.
Yeah.
If you think about it.
Yeah.
I'm like,
and it was hard selling.
Yeah.
It was cold call. You know, build rapport by saying how are you doing really quickly, and then get to, you know, basically close, change the subject, close again. If you can't get a deal, then get a commitment for a future deal. And that was it. That was the script.
Ours was, hey, dangle a carrot in front of the managers and see if you can get them to bite on it. And that was really it. And my training, I remember my training took place in 2 days. And it was, okay, so here's some of the technological terms and what you need to understand. Mm-hmm. And here's your script. And it wasn't much more than that. And I just remember, like, man.
How did you keep going? How did you not get frustrated? Like, did you make it work? Did you make the script your own? Like, did that become successful for you? Did you leave? What happened?
No, so I have this kind of defect in my brain where, like, when I start something, I have to finish it. And so I had moved up there with the commitment that, like, I'm either going to get really good at this or... I mean, there wasn't another option. I mean, it was like there was failure wasn't an option.
Going back to photography wasn't an option.
Yeah, yeah. It was just like, this is where I'm meant to be. And this is like, I'm going to get really good at this. And that's it. And again, I think your mindset really comes into play as to whether or not you're going to be successful. If you tell yourself, I'm going to try something out and see if it works, it's not going to work out.
Where did you, what did you, how did you get that mindset so early on in your career? What fostered that for you?
I don't know. I think it's just part of who I am. Maybe I'm just stubborn, you know? I think I really had this desire, this strong desire to be able to buy a place and build a life and do things that...
What were you chasing? What were you chasing? Like, what did success look like for you? Like, what did being good at that craft mean to you?
You know, I think whenever I've done anything, I have to finish it, right? Like there's I don't know if that's a defect in my brain. That's why I know I can't play video games anymore because they make video games so you can't stop. Mm. Like it's just continual, like keep going, right? And I loved playing video games for the longest time, but like they just don't end. So there's no, and kind of my business has been the same way in recruiting. You continually evolve and you try to get better and better at what you do. And so, you know, to answer your question, I don't know really where that comes from or how that evolved. It's just part of me.
Okay. So you're in Idaho, you got a half-assed script, no training. Here's a few terms that you can use. Dangle the carrot and get these hiring managers interested, right?
Yeah.
And you said, you know, you can't go back to photography and you were determined to be good at that or be successful at that job. What did success look like?
Yeah. Let me take it back a little bit. Okay, so the first thing, like my goal when I moved up there was I needed to be able to buy a season pass so I could snowboard every day at lunch. Like that's really what it came down to. I mean, I really moved up like probably 90% of my decision was to be able to go up and live in a mountain and snowboard.
Okay.
Right. Like that was really, that was kind of my motivation. My initial thing was I need to make enough money to buy a season pass. So I was able to get there. And I got to say, like getting into recruiting with no training, trial by fire was like the most difficult thing you can possibly do. And what kept me going was I couldn't fail. But I will tell you that there were so many nights I went home and I put my pillow over my face and I just wanted to smother myself and not wake up in the morning. Like it was that tough.
And you were there all by yourself. You had no.
Well, there was me and another guy. So, you know.
But I mean, like family, close friends, none of that really, right?
Not close family. I mean, I was working for my cousin at the time, so it was a distant family.
But it must have felt pretty lonely.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know. I guess I didn't feel like that. I just felt like really frustrated because I was doing the same thing over and over again and like hoping to get better. But like, you know, you're just making a lot of mistakes.
Yeah.
And I remember to make it even more difficult, my boss wasn't even like, we were there for like a week and a half, maybe 2 weeks. And then he had to take off and come back to LA to do some work at his company. So like, me and this guy, Dave Stone, who like we kind of came up together. We were the first two hires. We're sitting in the office and we're like, oh my God, this is brutal. And we're like, you know, we had one day where we like, we were playing koosh, like, you know, the little baskets that hang on a window, and we were like playing koosh basketball. And then finally we decided, like, the whole morning we were playing that. And then we decided, you know what, let's go out at lunch and drink a pitcher of margaritas. So we went out and we were like commiserating with ourselves. We're like, this job sucks. We hate it. I'm like, yeah, but we got to figure out a way to get good at it. And he's like, well, you know what? Best way to get good at something is drink a lot of margaritas. So we went to this Mexican food place. We drank a pitcher of margaritas, came back, like walked back to the office, and we were drunk. And we just both decided at lunch, okay, look at, let's make cold calls and let's see how many, let's have a contest to see how many job orders you can get. And I'm not kidding you, like that afternoon when we were buzzed or drunk making cold calls, that was like a pivoting point in my career. And it was funny because we were saying anything. And like
liquid courage
made people laugh. I mean, I remember saying to somebody, I'm like, look, you don't have to work with me. And quite frankly, I'm a little buzzed right now. I just drank a pitcher of margaritas at lunch. But here's why you want to talk to this guy. And I remember like that phone call, and the guy goes, okay, that sounds cool. And all of a sudden,
that's like, huge though.
Things switch.
That's huge because you were being real. You were being raw. You were totally being authentic. You were being yourself. You weren't following a script. You weren't trying to pretend to be something.
No.
And you were getting results.
Yeah. Yeah.
That buzzed was, or not.
Yeah.
That's what works.
That was such a turning point for both of us. That day, I think he beat me by one extra job.
So the recipe
order
to success was margaritas at lunch.
It was back then, yeah. And it could be now. I don't know. Maybe we should go grab some margaritas at lunch.
All right. So let's fast forward a little. Let's like, how long did this stint last? What happened? How did it end? Like, how so long did you stay there?
It took me about 6 months to get fairly competent.
Did you get your pass that you wanted?
Oh yeah. I hit my goal. I got my season pass. So, you know, and then I had this next goal in my head, which was, okay, I want to be able to snowboard every day at lunch for the winter. So I knew that to keep my boss off my back, I had to consistently be producing. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I just had to hit my numbers every day, and taking a 2-hour lunch every day was not a problem. So I was the first one in the office every morning. I'd get in at like 7 a.m. I'd already have all my resumes out. I'd be setting up interviews, and we had like, we did everything manually. We had like a referral board, right? Where like it was a piece of paper and we wrote down all of our interviews that we're setting up for the week. Mm-hmm. So I just made sure that I gave him no reason to give me shit about going snowboarding at lunch.
So you had to be really good.
Yeah.
And produce.
No, I just, you know what? Actually, I didn't have to be really good. I just had to grind. And that's the thing. I think, and back then, you know, you just have to hit your numbers when you're doing recruiting.
Or any sales really, right? You got to hit your numbers.
Exactly.
And something that can't be taught a lot of times is that grit and that hard work ethic, right? You can have the fanciest tools and the best process and all those things, but nothing's going to replace good old fashioned hard work.
That's true. And then, you know, so then I was just able to do what I wanted to go snowboarding every day at lunch. And, you know, I remember my first year, I got over 100 days of snowboarding in. And, you know, it was 2 hours during the day at lunch almost every day. And then on the weekends, and I was like, this is great. So then my next goal was, okay, I want to buy a place here. And, you know, he was super supportive in helping everybody, like he helped me buy a place. And so I bought a place that was in Sun Valley, that was a condo that was like, I could walk to the ski lift every day. Mm. So it just made, you know, just made things easy. And then, so we did a run in Idaho. I think I was there for about 4, maybe 5 years. And then he decided he was going to move back to California, and he wanted me to come with him. And he brought me in as kind of the co-founder of the company. And essentially, we came back to California. We started up a company called Cross Creek Systems.
What was the reason to close the company and start a new one?
No, he didn't close it.
Oh.
He kept that whole operation up in Idaho going. But I think they were just tired of living in Idaho and wanted to move back to California. And so it was just a natural, easy progression because I had grown up in that area and basically so. And at the time, I was kind of like, okay, I've done my 4 years in the mountains. I was really missing surfing. Mm-hmm. So the only time I got to surf was you know, in the wintertime, I would do a vacation and head to see my buddy in Hawaii or, you know, go see my family. And then that would be the only time I would surf. So, I packed up with him and we came back and we moved to Westlake Village and started up Cross Creek Systems. And it was during the whole dot-com bubble. So like, you know, we got that whole uptrack mm-hmm. of that whole
so
ride.
So business was booming.
Oh, it was ridiculous.
So how many people were in this office?
So I had a team of 8 people. We had another team of...
And were you training these people?
Yeah, yeah.
And what was
I was heading up operations.
And how were you guys doing business? Was it still just that old, you know, phone slinging style?
Yeah.
I'm just trying to think what at that point, what like was that life changing money for you or like that was a you know booming time. So how successful were you and what experiences did you have in that time?
So yeah, that whole ride, like even through Idaho up until like 9/11 ish, you know, like right around that time. It was just this upward track. And from an income perspective, like I started out, I think I did my first year in recruiting, I did like $72,000. Like I really turned it on and was able to like be one of the top producers. What was interesting is like, you know, there's always that, okay, you're a top producer. Now let's move you up to a manager.
Mm.
And then it got really wonky for me because I had no idea how to manage people. So the advice I was given was read a book or, you know, lead by example, which is, by the way, if you're giving people advice, that's the worst advice you can get. You know, so I got really frustrated at one point and I went and I took some college courses at like a local community college just so I can understand like what I should be doing.
How to be a better leader.
Yeah, exactly.
What were some of the biggest challenges for you being a leader with lack of experience and...
Well, just understanding that people are different, right?
You can't manage everybody the same way. There's no cookie cutter way to motivate individuals.
Yeah. And you know, there's a fine line between holding people accountable and being a micromanager. Mm. Like it's really easy to cross and it's based on somebody's perception.
What would you think those people would say about you as their leader?
Oh,
their
God. I was terrible. God, like, you know, I made every mistake you could possibly make as a leader. And I think, you know, it's been a slow evolution for me just, you know, after I took some college courses, I started to understand. But then, you know, you're always in this role where you're a producer slash manager, right? So that's
selling manager, right?
Yeah. Yeah. You're actively out there making placements and closing deals and doing, you know, bringing in business.
Which is really a horrible way to do things because you're so split and divided of where to put your time.
It's so tough. And, you know, I was with him for quite a number of years. And then it came to a point where, you know, around 9/11-ish, he wanted to, like, my team was doing really well. I think as a whole, the company was doing like $8 million a year or something like that. And my team was like 2/3 of that production. So, you know, we needed to promote the people within, and there was a couple guys that were like, you know, just crushing it from a productive standpoint. And we really needed to like kind of give them a team. And so we were trying to figure out ways to expand. I think the mentality was, you know, as long as you're with the company, you need to be producing. And so I'm like, well, but we can grow an organization. We focus on building the business and not working in the business. I mean, we can make a lot more impact. And that was really where I wanted to grow to.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't want to start a brand new group, which was kind of the idea was, okay, well, let's go into biotech and
so
you can start up a brand new
and
group.
And that's the way a lot of recruitment companies are today, right? They have different divisions that focus on very specific niches, right?
Yeah, yeah. And I was asked to leave a really productive group to give somebody else an opportunity with not a lot of upside on that to build a brand new thing in an unproven market and in even a market that I was really not interested in.
Mm.
And so around that time, I just kind of made the decision of, well, okay, this is a good time for me to exit. Because when I joined, I said, hey, look, my goal in coming, moving back to California and building this is I want to build a big vertical organization, but I need growth from the perspective, like I need to upward mobility, not sideways mobility. So if you're going to ask me to go and build another group from scratch, I would rather just go to do my own thing. And so I made the decision to part ways. And again, I make decisions kind of fast. I remember I went out to breakfast over the weekend. I was trying to think, okay, well, do I really want to start a biotech group? And I was having this conversation with a friend of mine, and basically just came to the conclusion that like I have to stay true to what I want to do, and their growth wasn't there for me. So I just made a decision that I'm going to pack up, sell all my stuff, and move to Hawaii. And so
it sound like it was such an easy decision for you.
Well, kind of.
To walk away
it was,
from
in a way.
A really high place of success.
Yeah.
With starting this company, it was that easy to just walk away?
It kind of was. But like I was given an ultimatum in a way, you know, like, hey, you need to go start this group. And it was either that or I can fight them on it. And I really didn't want to fight them on it. I just felt like, hey, look, you know what? This is a good opportunity for me to go and do something that I really want to do.
So then were you then competing with him basically?
Yeah. Well, I took the first year off, so I didn't really compete with him. I was able to exit, and we had a really good split. It was not a big, I mean, there's no issues with it at all. It was right after 9/11. So like the market in tech just kind of, and the whole tech bubble burst. So it was a good time for me to go. I spent probably 6 months writing my business plan and surfing every day, getting back into like being in the water and connecting with who I am as a person, I think. I'm a water person, so I think much clearly, and I get out my aggression by doing that sort of thing.
How did that time off help you personally, like evolve and change and kind of maybe get regrounded?
Well, it's kind of conflicted actually. So like, you know, it helped me to spend a lot of time and be with myself and kind of understand what I wanted. But at the same time, I was kind of putting in the groundwork to building my business plan so that I could open up a new company in Hawaii. At that time, it was interesting because I met a guy who had a recruiting firm in Hawaii that he was doing all kinds of business in Japan, and the market in Japan was doing really well. So what he was trying to build is what I had already built. Like I had built organizations that have been remote. One thing about like I was doing Bay Area recruiting for tech companies, but I never lived in the Bay Area up until that time frame. I had always lived in Idaho or Southern California. So I had built these remote teams that were highly productive, and that's what he was trying to build. Mm. And so he asked me to come work with him and help him kind of scale and build the organization. So I did like a 6-month contract with him where we kind of came in and I built in a lot of the structure and the operational things. I put a lot of training in place and a bunch of other kind of little things for him. And then I finished up my contract, and then the market was kind of turning around in the Bay Area. So I just decided to like kind of scale back and then start up my company there.
And so when the market kind of crashed, was that a tough time for you personally and professionally?
Of course. Yeah.
Devastating was it for you?
Well, I mean, my income suffered a bit, but again, you know, it was interesting because I was able to exit or kind of make the arrangements to exit before the market crashed. Mm. So it carried through, but then I carried through for a few months. We made the decision before 9/11, and then 9/11 happened. And then we carried it out through the end of the year. And I think I stayed and I transitioned everybody until like March of the following year. So, I mean, you know, whenever you go through a recession or any hard times, I mean, it's just, you just got to put your headphones on and just grind harder, right? Because
yeah.
you know, it's hard to find business, and you end up taking business that that you get as opposed to business that you want, but you just make it work, right? You have to drive revenue into your company. So we were able to still do fairly well, but I mean, I think we lost about half of our production, and we also had to get rid of probably maybe 25% of our staff, you know, during that time. But we were able to still carry through, and especially carry through the tough times. Interesting thing is, like, most of the people that were productive in that time frame are still like recruiters and still doing really well in the down markets. Because if you can survive through those and you have the skills to do that, then you know, the rest is cake.
Okay, so talk to us about you starting your own firm on your own, you know, by yourself. What was that like?
Yeah. You know, it's interesting because I've always been strangely enough, I'm from a sports perspective, I'm like a single person and I do board sports. But the way that I was brought up in business was from a team perspective. So one of the things that I learned from my old mentor was that, like, everything was structured in a team environment. And that team environment was even tied to revenue. So we shared commissions. So if I made a placement, everybody else on my team would get a piece of it, right? So it was a really interesting way of doing it. Now, it didn't scale because you couldn't have a team over 8 people. But and if you had people that weren't pulling their weight, it became kind of a self-managing thing where people would be like, okay, look, you're not pulling your weight. We're either going to help you get there or we're going to push you out.
Right.
And so that was an interesting kind of lesson.
So you no longer had the team.
I didn't have a team, and it was just on me. And we had a good leadership team at Cross Creek. You know, I had my mentor. I was running I was responsible for most of production and kind of making sure that the other two teams were productive as well. So I was there to support, and I didn't have that at all. So that was another like big transition that I had to get over. And I basically just grew the way that I knew to grow, which is grinding it out, making it happen, driving revenue, and then hiring more people. There was something missing. The market was changing, and what ended up happening was that there's this higher level of partnership and expectations from a lot of our clients that said, look, we're not going to accept, you know, just you sending us resumes and setting up interviews. They wanted more out of it. So I had to really start delving into, like, okay, well, what do I need to do as a recruiter? What do my people need to do? And so we started looking into like different training and different methodology. And I started really kind of educating myself on what other people were doing. And I did,
and
like
that's so different than how you started.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it was more like see what sticks type of attitude, right?
Yeah. And I think one of the people that was working for me, like, I gave them a training and they were like, this is like really mediocre training. Like, they were pretty forthright about the fact that, like, so basically what you're saying is just pick up the phone and dial and make another cold call and that's going to work. And I'm like, yeah, you're probably right. Like, I think we need some structure here. So that set me on a journey for education. And you know, I felt like I was always pretty good at recruiting, but I think the more I delved into that journey, I started to learn, like, I'm really not that good. I've just been lucky.
What makes you say that?
Well, because when you understand the psychology of what that recruitment process is, when you understand, like, that you're doing it for a reason other than just grinding it out to make a bunch of money, it becomes a different journey. It becomes more of a value-based organization as opposed to, like, you know, the one of the things that bothered me about what we do is that I was expendable. So if I pissed off one of my clients, it didn't matter how many good people I placed there. If I placed one bad person, they would fire you in a heartbeat and move on to somebody else.
And so let me see if I, so you, and you didn't like you said you were lucky, right? So do you explain that a little bit more? That you said you weren't good, but you were lucky, and it was more like, if I'm understanding it right, you were just literally chasing the commission check?
Well, yeah, if you think about
deeper
it,
than that.
So it's a transactional sale as opposed to a enterprise-driven sale, right? Like if you're creating a relationship with somebody and you're going to do business with them over and over again, that's an enterprise relationship, right? Like it's a longer lead time to get them to trust you than, hey, I've got a resume, you want to hire this person, great. And transactional relationships are expendable. Mm. Right.
So how have you shifted from that, away from that?
Man, so yeah, I got set on kind of this journey maybe about 7 to 10 years ago where like I really started to realize, hey, look, there's a deeper level to what we do. There's more of a value-driven proposition here to where you can get referral business, you can take on higher level searches, you can do a lot more quality work as opposed to quantity work. Mm. And that's what we kind of, with my organization, that's what we evolved into, is that we don't take on every assignment. We take on companies that are in alignment with our values, and our values are to provide like the best person for that organization. It's a more tailored approach as opposed to a like, hey, I've got 15 people, let's hope you hire one. And that's the methodology for what I was taught, was just throw as much shit at a wall and see what sticks.
Mm-hmm.
And hopefully you throw enough, then enough sticks.
I think a lot of salespeople or recruiters or anybody in any certain industry, that we all start somewhere, right?
Oh, yeah.
So
yeah.
Whether it's a half-assed script or shitty training or lack of, right?
Yeah.
The good salespeople or the good entrepreneurs evolve from that into what it sounds like you care more about the people rather than the profit or the commission, right?
Yeah, I think the sad part is there's still a lot of business that's done like that, right? Like it's just, hey, we'll hire a bunch of people, whoever makes it makes it. But you know, if you're gonna invest the time into somebody, like why not set them up for success? That was something that resonated with me. Early in my career, I don't think I was setting anybody up for success. I was just kind of, again, we were hiring a bunch of people and hoping they made it. It's like, here's your paycheck.
You needed your annual pass.
Yeah.
Nothing mattered but getting that annual pass, right?
Well, then I had a bunch of other goals. It was funny. I remember going to a Tom Hopkins seminar over a weekend, and he had everybody write down 100 goals, and I wrote down 300. And like they were all small ones. But I remember by my 30th birthday, I wanted to own a Ferrari. Like I've always been a Ferrari fan. So I worked really hard to make sure that on my 30th birthday, I went and I wrote a check and bought my Ferrari.
Wow.
Yeah. So like that was...
Do you still have a Ferrari today?
No.
What happened to the Ferrari?
Yeah. So there's some funny story about the Ferrari. Man, like I bought this Ferrari and I bought it from a professional basketball player. And it was a 355 Spider. It was like black on black. It was like the coolest car ever. About a month or two into it, the engine went. Like I had to go take it in and get it like repaired. And it was like in the shop for 2 months. And then, but I'll tell you, like I bought it and the weekend that I got it, like it just so happened that Ferrari was having this kind of training thing at one of the racetracks here outside of LA. And so I went and did this whole experience and learned how to drive the car. And it was, you know, it was really satisfying. It was really amazing. Right. So, you know, again, like I said, I've always kind of figured out a way to get what I wanted to get, you know? And so
is that still true today or has things changed for you
on the Ferrari side?
As far as like just being, you know, being very goal oriented, lots of goals, you know, hitting those goals, determined, grinding it out, you know, like has the idea of success or goals changed for you?
Well, it's definitely changed because I had a family, right? So my goals are different. It's not about acquiring, material things anymore so much as it's like my daughter getting a great education or, you know, my daughter's really into, I have a 10-year-old who's really into ballet and she does jujitsu. So we kind of have that bonding thing. I've when I was in Hawaii, what ended up happening was I had a buddy who was doing MMA and he talked me into it. So I went down this whole interesting track where I started doing like martial arts and
the common theme is anything you do, you got to be great at. So
yeah, I don't know if I'm great at it yet, but I've been practicing jiu-jitsu for quite a few years and like now I'm a brown belt. I'm like one belt away from my black belt. So
I think that qualifies you as good, not lucky.
Yeah. I put in the time for sure. So
tell us, before we close it out, just tell us, what does your life look like today, personally, a little bit more and professionally, and then let us, let the listeners know where they can connect with your mind and learn more about you.
Yeah. So from a professional standpoint, I've got a small company. We focus in on what I call engaged search, which is a higher level of retained search. We help companies find key hires in engineering, sales and marketing, and operations across quite a few different verticals. But like we have this kind of ideal that the company hire they have a really high bar for quality, and they have kind of a disruptive mindset. They really want to elevate their performance within their organization. And we provide a lot of that structure to do that. So we actually, we look at everything from like they're starting at their job description and how they do that. And we build everything from that out, including their interview process. Mm. So that one of the biggest holes that I found with a lot of the entrepreneurs that I've met is that they don't have any sort of interview process. They sit down, they talk about they'll have a conversation. Oh yeah, you like Ferraris? I like Ferraris. We have something in common. They look for commonalities and they hire based on that or based on skills. So we've helped them to really put a process in place that is impressive. First off, like the person walks out and then goes, oh my God, these guys have their shit together. This is a legitimate operation, because people are going to judge you on your interview process.
So you put equally as much work into the client of getting them prepared and adding value so that the great candidates are having a good experience with the client as well and making the perfect match.
Yeah. And there is no perfect match, but like making a good fit. And they're not getting beat by people who come in with higher check, like bigger, fatter checkbooks, right? And that's a problem that a lot of companies run into. So they'll find somebody great, and then they'll make them an offer, and then they'll turn down their offer because they took an offer at Amazon that's like $50,000 more and they can't compete with that. Mm. Well, if you are approaching your hiring process in a transactional like capacity, that's all you have to deal with. So you're going to lose every time to a fatter checkbook. But if you approach it from the perspective of like, hey, look at, here's the value our organization brings to you and your family and your career, and you understand what's important to that individual, and you can, and more importantly, they realize that's how you land people independent of like a big fat paycheck. Mm. Right. And so that's what we help companies do. And then, from a goal perspective, we've decided to kind of keep, we're small. We only handle like 5 to maybe 7 searches at a time. We do a lot with a podcast and growing that audience. And, I do some speaking engagements and I do some other things that kind of keep me, on the forefront of kind of what's going on out there. So to answer your question, I have these like little micro goals. I don't have that list of the 350 that I did, but I do know that of those 350 goals.
I'd love to know how many
of
the 350, how many did you hit?
Yeah. Before I moved to Hawaii, of those 350, I hit 137. Mm. And then I think one of the goals was actually moving to Hawaii. So strangely enough, it was on my goals list to be able to go live where I wanted to live. It was either Hawaii or Bali. And so I settled in Hawaii since Bali didn't really have internet connectivity or good phone lines.
Well, it's been great having you on the show. tell the listeners where they can connect with you online, where they can find your podcast and all that good stuff.
Yeah, absolutely. So you can reach out to me via email. It's Rick, R-I-C-K, at Stride, S-T-R-I-D-E, search, S-E-A-R-C-H.com. You can check out Higher Power Radio, and that's HIREPOWERRADIO.com. That's where you can find the podcast. You can find it on any of the podcast platforms, or you can call me, man. I'm fairly regimented on my schedule, but you can give me a buzz at 949-777-5656 if you have any questions.
All right. Awesome. Thanks, Rick.
Hey, thanks for having me, Colin. Oh, yeah, we got to do this, right?
Fist bump.
In for another episode of Monster Chats, presented by Monster VoIP, where we share the tools, methods, and best practices that business leaders use to build new connections, strengthen relationships, and impact sales in organizations of all shapes and sizes. If you have any questions from today's show and want to reach us directly, please text your question to 424-378-6966.